Here's one of the most famous John Caples ads of all time. Notice illustration at the top, headline below it, drop initial over here, and the coupon ordering form, the subheads that break up the paragraph. These are some of the most successful ads of all time.
Carl, tell them where you're getting these ads from.
Pardon?
Tell them how they get a library of these ads.
You can get a library of these ads through some books that I... they're in various books. A bunch of them are in something called 100 Greatest Advertisements of All Time, which I don't have here today.
Repeat that title.
The 100 Greatest Ads.
Every single copywriter in this room, plus Karen and I, and most of the people who are successful in direct mail, we all have a large library, probably a couple of hundred books. If you walk into my studios, which you're probably going to do either Thursday or Friday, you'll notice that I have 200 books in the back on the walls, but the books behind my desk or on my desk are these right here. Anytime I want to write an ad, I like looking at the Caples book or some of the other books because
I saw them flash up here,
I saw points. If you want to write an ad, you know what the easiest way is? To take an ad like that and say, oh, it's easy. I put my headline on top. I put my subhead there. I put a drop first paragraph leader there. I actually get out, and as I mentioned this before, with a ruler and measure the distance between the lines, measure the distance from the bottom of the page, measure the distance from the side. You notice how it's got about a half inch on each side. I measure all that stuff out because if somebody else has developed and worked for them, who am I to reinvent the wheel?
In fact, this is a good example. The Gift of the Magi, I was going through a New York Times book review edition in 1927 looking for a Haldeman Julius ad, which I found. And this is something I came upon that really intrigued me. Is this the greatest story O. Henry ever wrote? Now, doesn't that sound like, do you make these mistakes in English? I was intrigued by it, and I discovered that this is the whole story of the Gift of the Magi. There's no copy in there. That's just the whole story. And at the end, after reading this story, which is one of the most powerful stories O. Henry ever wrote, at the end it says, if you'd like more of O. Henry's stories, you can buy a whole collection. Just order it from Doubleday, I believe it was, at the bottom. So I had a book that I thought was really great. It's called The Magic Story, and there were two parts to it. And in the first part, by reading all of it, you didn't really get to know what it was, the essence of it. You got to know what the effect was. It was almost like an ad for the second part of the book. So I said, this is a great idea. I got the rights to the book, and I got the right to reproduce the first part of the book as my advertisement, and it worked so well that when I just send that out, I get a 20% response on it. So you want to know what I'm going to do with the thing, see me later. In your pack, you have this $1 million sales letter. In Gary's April 87 issue, he tells you to get a hold of ads that work. He gives you a list of some of them. These are 15 letters that Robert Collier wrote that are in the Robert Collier letter book. These are just the letters, 15 of them. There are hundreds of letters in the Robert Collier letter book, but these are a good start. Copy them in your own handwriting. Comp them up into an actual letter. You will get the feel for doing these letters, just like the guys who wrote them or similar to that. I just want to get, can I just get a couple very quick letters that were just an example of headlines. Oops, wrong thing. Okay, this is a letter that I wrote for a client who actually was in love with the product, and this letter didn't work. It's a letter for shareware. We get 103 or 100 shareware programs for $49.95, and it didn't work. And I said, you know, maybe no one wants this product. You know, why don't we just drop it? Maybe it's not the product itself. And he said, no, I think it'll work. I really think it'll work. Let's try again. So we tried again. And I said, look, we got to do major surgery. I can't test one or two things at a time. Let's do major surgery. I thought of Frank Capra, who had this thing, The Lost Horizon. Everybody knows that movie? It was a real famous movie, won awards. He tested that out with his own crew of people, and they all loved the movie, and they knew it would be a big hit. It went to the test in a movie theater where they tested before they released the film. And it flopped. No one liked it. There were people walking out at the beginning of the movie. He agonized over it, and he had another test schedule before the release, which was unusual. And he agonized and couldn't figure out what to do it. And at the last minute, he rushed in and he said, throw the first two reels away. And they threw the first two reels away because there was a build-up in the story to when he goes off to Shangri-La. And he said, just put the credits take the front of the film, put it at the beginning of the third reel, and just do it that way. And the film worked beautifully and won an Academy Award and everything. So what I did is I threw away the first part of the letter, which is some of a build-up, and I took a look at it, and I said, this is negative cell. I didn't want it. I changed the headlines a little. I made them a little smaller. I took out some other things on it, reduced the price by $10. This is what it now looks like. This does 8 times the response that this one did that didn't work. This one now works and pulls 8 times the response that this one did. And I wish I could get into more details about how to do all that stuff. I have some examples here, and I think we'll just end off at that.
Thank you. Good. Are there any questions? I have one question, and it's a question everybody here should ask. I'm surprised somebody hadn't asked it. What does it take to buy the rights to a book? I mean, exactly who do you contact? How do you find it? What do they cost?
You contact the publisher. You talk to the permissions department. You negotiate a royalty payment in advance, which is relatively small, actually. If they do not want to, if they have no plans for doing the book, then you can get it for probably $1,000 or $1,500 in advance royalties against about a 10% royalty, which is about average. One thing I would like to say is there are several classics, and I guess I'm going to have to carry the banner on this because there are several classics which are out of print and nobody can get. I can't even get. I'd like to reprint them. And today, just waking up, I just thought of this idea. Why don't I get people who'd like to double their money who invest in this? It costs about $10,000 to $15,000 to print and produce a book with the advanced royalties and everything. And what I will do is if I get enough investors for a particular book, I will get that published, and every copy that gets sold, you get the amount of your investment plus that amount doubled again. And I thought that was an interesting idea. If anybody's interested, see me about it. Maybe we'll get some more classics into the field. There's some really hot sellers like Haldeman Julius's first 100 million. Max Sackheim's My First 65 Years in Advertising. There's not one I just discovered by G. Lynn Sumner, which it wrote about the same time as Robert Collier, same quality as Robert Collier. And he wrote How I Found Success in Advertising or something. It's a really great book.
Carl, thank you. What we're going to do now is we're going to go to lunch. We're going to meet back in this room at 2 o'clock. We're going to close the doors at 2 o'clock, and we're going to write an offer with all the creative copyrighted people. We're going to have this offer printed out on the laser printer by 5. 2 o'clock, we're going to close the doors. You can't get in after that.
Actually, I do. With Andy Rouse, we're supposed to go to lunch with Andy.
Is it for another, or is that...
I don't know. Why don't you talk to Andy, because I'm not...
Just pass them.
Yeah, just keep passing.
A lot of stuff in here.
Are you up and going?
Yeah, I'm up and going. Just real briefly to give you a little bit of background on myself, I started in radio when...
Bring the volume up a little bit, please.
I started in radio when radio was a bunch of guys sitting in little bitty rooms without windows with an ashtray that had butts piled in it about this high, and people listened to radio and believed what they heard on radio. And that kind of approach has never left the philosophy that I carry around with me. I'm pleased to see you all here because one of the things that is so great about this business is that there are so many different ways to market a product. One of the things about the spoken word that you need to keep in mind is that the spoken word triggers a different set of inputs than the written word. We've been focusing a lot on a pitch, a direct mail piece, a catalog, things that you hold in your hand, things that are printed. Don't rule out the possibility that you can take a good idea and stick it in somebody's ear and make some money. Okay? Radio is not what it used to be in terms of results. Almost anybody that's tried radio advertising in the past 5 years can tell you that that's true. But the audio medium is not dead. The audio medium is still alive and kicking. Talking books are selling better than they ever have in history. And more people are being motivated by tapes in their car. It's what one of our speakers mentioned earlier. If you've got 20 minutes of drive time, you've got 20 minutes to sell somebody something.
Yeah, you can take almost any direct mail pitch and put it on tape and deliver it for the same price as you could deliver printed paper. Because to produce a 15-minute cassette, the duplication cost and the cassette, the raw cassette, is going to be like 30 cents a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are captive in their cars, I mean, you got a captive audience who are looking for something to listen to.
Plus, their defenses aren't up as high when they're driving a car. They're paying attention to the road, the traffic, what else is going on. Those ears are open, and you have an open pipeline directly into their brain without a lot of the defense mechanisms that normally exist when they read a printed piece or, you know, use a skeptical form of judgment to evaluate the information that you're presenting. So you have a selling opportunity through audio, and that's what I'm here to help you with. Anybody that would like to visit with me on one of the breaks or after the meeting tonight or at some other time, please feel free to just grab me as I go by, and we'll do some of that. One of the things that Bill wants me to do is read a little something here. And this is a print piece. Does everybody have a copy of this, or this is just your piece that you brought? Okay. Just to give you an idea, this is... I'm just going to read a cold off the headline here. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs just so that you can perceive the difference between what something looks like in a written form and what it sounds like in an audible form. And that's the difference that you need to consider when you're considering doing something with your marketing project. If you're tired of the daily grind and long for freedom, freedom to work when you want with a business that makes you over $78,000 a year, this is it. And the amazing thing is, you don't need a stack of money to get started. My name is Patrick McAllister, and until recently, I owned a computer store in Carbondale, Colorado. Before opening my own computer store, I was the manager of Computerland franchise in Aspen. Who cares, you say? Well, I've discovered a way you can make as much money as you want and have plenty of free time to enjoy it. How would you like to make over $400 a day? $400 a day won't be your biggest day. You can make as much money as you want. Working 3 days a week, making $400 a day, you can gross over $64,000 per year. Pretty good, wouldn't you say? I know, you're asking yourself if I'm some kind of nut. Making this kind of money must take lots of schooling, lots of training, or lots of something. The truth is, it's easy, and anybody can do it. There's just an example of how your presentation comes across through the ear. So that's what I do. If you'd like to talk to me about it, please grab a hold of me during a break or something like that, and I'll be happy to visit. John?
Somebody?
Is Mike here?
Is Mike here? You know what you did wrong in this direct mail offer? What's the first word in this offer? My. How many times did you use the word I, me, mine in the first paragraph? Yeah, look at that. My is the very first word. Here is I.
Is this the one I just read? Is this your offer? These poor folks? These people are examples of tenacity in the face of sheer bullheadedness.
These people
called me and asked me what they should do. Then they didn't do it. Now they're going to do it. Which was not, I did not come up to humiliate these people. These are wonderful people.
No, you don't need to humiliate them anymore.
That's true. Well, I didn't come up to humiliate them because, you see, when you cop out and you say, I've been a dumbass, then it's impossible to take any further abuse. What I was going to say is, when I was speaking to all of you, I told you we had this really expensive guy in Los Angeles who did voice work for us. And we had this inexpensive guy in the Midwest who did voice work for us. And so far as I could tell, I could not tell the difference. And I told you that the guy in the Midwest did not lose his tapes, showed up on time. He does not have a fax machine, however, but in time, perhaps, he will move into the 20th century.
Keep sending me checks, John. I'll buy one.
That's right. And I keep sending JR checks, and the guy in the Midwest is Eric Cox. So instead of going through a long
line of bullshit about why you need voiceover work. I'm just telling you that we've paid a lot for it, and we've paid a reasonable price for it, and that this guy has our business.
Another
if that
thing
matters
is,
to you, then that's important.
Even if you live in Alaska, even if you live in Australia, how much trouble it is to send the fax to somebody, have them read the script, and send it back to you on tape? You don't have to live in the same town. Keep that in mind no matter what you do. If you live in New York City and you want to hire somebody voiceover, it's going to cost you $500-$600 an hour. Because the guy lives in New York City the same way you do, and he can't afford to live there. This is Arkansas. Hire talent where talent can afford to live on a less expensive budget. I mean, if you want to be like Gary Halbert and move to Key West, where is the most expensive place in the world to live, then you've got to be like Gary Halbert and able to make as much money as you can. Like he says, it bounces off of. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he pays more in rent than you could buy for my building. He pays more in rent for 6 months than my building costs if you just bought it outright. And that's because I'm in Arkansas, he's in Key West. Wait, not unless you have a mic.
I'll loan you mine.
You can embarrass anybody as long as you have a mic.
No, I don't want to embarrass anybody. After you embarrassed this couple, could you tell us what the lesson was? You said they use the word my and I.
Yeah, you never use the word me, my, I. Because are you talking about yourself, or you want to get the customer involved in the very, very first line? One of the best words to use. One of the first words to use after you say dear friend is you. I had a PhD who sent me a letter. He said he ran an ad. He got 385 replies. Sent out his letter to 385 people, not a single order. He sent me his letter and said, tell me why. So I started reading and got my highlighter marked. In four pages, he used the word I, me, mine 192 times. He told us that he was a PhD. He told us he was always interested in marketing. He told us he never had a real job, had never had any real success in anything, but really wanted it. He told us about his dreams and his family and his wife and where he grew up. And I was probably the only person that read beyond the first page because he had the word I 62 times in the first page. I mean, when somebody sends you unsolicited mail, unless it is somebody who is famous, do you want to read about their background and their problems, the fact that they bust tables while they were in college? I mean, it's not going to help you. But if they say, if the first line says, you can be earning $150 an hour in 7 days, and this letter is going to show you how, and all you have to do is read the next six paragraphs, you got them involved immediately. But I'm not a copywriter. And unfortunately, we're going to spend the next 4 hours talking about copywriting. But fortunately for us, we have the Prince of Print, Gary Halbert, who's going to come up here and show us, and he's also going to involve all the other copywriters, how to write an offer for, remember the gold tester we showed this morning. Now, this is something only adults will want to watch.
I was going to say, this is pretty advanced for this crowd. And, you know, this is beyond R into NX, maybe NRX. And the creative process is notoriously messy.
Right.
And here we have a surplus of genii.
What I hope you'll learn from the next 4 hours is you're never going to learn copywriting from somebody else. You either have it or you don't. If you don't have it, don't spend 6 years learning copyright. Just hire somebody to do it. Right? We'll still have a little bit of money left in our budget. Maybe we can hire somebody to do copywriting for us. You can get copywriters for as little as $100 a page. In most cases, you get what you pay for. And I've got to wire Gary up if he's not still wired up from lunch.
Bill, I would like to point out to you, so as not to create delusions in the eyes of the people here, that there aren't any $100 a page copywriters in this room. That what you have recruited here are the best that any of us know.
I wouldn't bring $100 a page copywriters in this room. I mean,
from
people
far,
paid
from
to come
far
to
and narrow, right. And so I just want to make that distinction so that none of you get decked by any of the women copywriters.
None of them what? Okay. What I'm going to try and do here is illustrate or illuminate a little bit of the creative process for you. While Bill and everybody else was talking this morning, I got bored, so I just went ahead and wrote the promotion for the gold tester. Now, hey, Bond, could I get that hat? These lights are killer here. You can't, can you get me a hat? Has anybody got a ball cap in the room here? Oh, hell with all of you too, then. Okay. Anyway,
There's one thing I'm going to illustrate to you, a way that a copywriting team works. In this case, it's the team of Carlton and Halbert. Now, John can write, but he can't think. So basically, what we do, if we are working together, is I blueprint out the promotion and write a loosey-goosey first draft of it. I fax it to John. John writes a much more detailed second draft, and then I generally write the final draft. Now, actually, we work a lot of ways. John or myself, either one, can do this process completely. John's actually one of the best copywriters I've ever met. He can do it all by himself, and I could do it all by myself. But sometimes, just for comic relief, we like to work together because it just... You do this stuff and you get to the point where you can almost do it in a coma, but it's not as much fun. Bond, does Bond get in a hat? He was going to get a hat because these lights are murdering me. Okay. One of the things that you're going to find, and I want to emphasize something that most of you who I would classify as anal retentives are going to have a hard time grasping, and that is that there is a place in the creative process for humor. And this is, if you're going to do this yourself or work with creative people, there's a point here where you have got to drop your uptight image of this mindset. Every little, you know, there's a place for everything and a thing for every place, and we'll pigeonhole this and do all that. I mean, if you can't wail a little bit, you're never going to get really good at the creative process. The best creative meetings, where the most money is made, happen when me and John and Loretta and Brad Peterson and Carl Galletti and people like that are howling with laughter on the floor. And if you ever paid me $15,000 to create a promotion for you, plus 5%, and you came in and saw us doing it, you'd probably call the sheriff and have a shot. But the end result, that is part of the technique of getting this done. Now, what I did this morning is I wrote a very loosey-goosey first draft. I'm going to go over this first draft, and then I'm going to give it to Long John Silver here and the other copywriters, and they can tighten it up. This is not the only way to sell this product, but it illustrates one very good way to do it. The letter that I loosely crafted out this morning, now, due to budget limitations, We are not going to do a letter that's personalized. However, I would hope that later on we would get to the point where it's personalized. So this is going to be a dear friend letter. To begin with, I only mail one kind of envelope, and that is an envelope that's generally a number 10, and it's white, and it has, in this case, it would have Bill Myers in the corner. We call that a corner card. The upper left-hand corner, Bill Myers and his address, and then the address of the recipient will be typed onto the envelope, or at least it'll appear to be typed on, and there will be a real honest-to-God live postage stamp there. It will just look like one real human being sat down and addressed an envelope to another real human being. When you open it up, there is a letter in there, white paper, in case you ever get confused, black ink. And across the top of it, there is this typeset headline. 16 secret ways to buy gold and silver at rock bottom prices and make sure you never get ripped off! ! And I'll start reading the copy to you. Oh, thank you very much. You don't know how much that means to me. I can see you on there. This is my loosey-goosey first draft. Dear friend, did you know that for less than the cost of a Kruger Rand, you can learn an absolutely foolproof way to invest in gold and silver with no risk whatsoever? Listen, if you've ever bought gold and silver, there's an excellent chance you've been ripped off. Why? The answer is simple. You see, last year, U.S. investors bought more than 546,219 gold and silver coins, and believe it or not, ... 99% of them don't have a clue to the real value of what they bought. Did you know lots of gold coins sold as 18 carat is only 14 carat? That much sold as 14 carat is only 10 carat? Did you know a lot of items sold as gold contain no gold whatsoever? Have you ever bought gold coins, gold jewelry, gold bullion, or gold medallions? If so, you need a fast, foolproof way to make sure you're not getting ripped off. And now at last, here is a way, and it's called ... subhead, the marriage destroyer. That's a funny name, isn't it? The reason this device got the nickname marriage destroyer, it has been used by so many women to test their wedding rings, and it turns out many women have discovered their wedding rings are not gold at all. However, you don't need this device to test your wedding ring. No, you need it to test all the investment gold for which you shell out your hard-earned money. Man, oh man, I'll tell you, this machine is amazing. It identifies 10-carat, 14-carat, and 18-carat gold. It will also read no gold. It's fast, accurate, has an auto-off, a ready light, and a low battery indicator. It's lightweight, portable, and it comes with a beautiful hard side carrying case. Now, get this. If you order this unit, and if you order it right away, parentheses, within the next 11 days, close parentheses, you will also receive my new report, which reveals 16 secret ways to buy gold and silver that you've never known about. Here is a little of what you will read about, well, of what this report will reveal. And then there is a series of bullets. Bullet, an almost secret way to make large coin dealers sell you their coins at up to 40%, 42% below the list price. Bullet, how to pick up huge bargains by ripping off little old ladies. Bullet. An ingenious technique that enables you to legally rob pawnbrokers. Bullet. A dirty secret about maple leaf coins and why you should never buy any of them. Bullet. Two ways why American Eagle coins have been used by the U.S. government to rip off taxpayers. Bullet. A silly but effective method of getting folks in your hometown to give you their valuable coins. Bullet, how to insure your coins for twice their value and cash in on the policy even if your coins are never lost or stolen. Bullet, where to buy 18-carat panda golds for only half what others pay. Bullet, why Krugerrands are still the best way to invest in gold if you know this. Bullet, how Mr. X, a man known as the Prince of Paranoia, cleverly is able to force the government to sell him bullion gold at below the official spot price. Bullet, a secret code that appears in the Wall Street Journal every business day that, if you know how to decipher it, will tell you exactly what gold will be selling for a month from the day you read the paper. There's more, a lot more. This report will really open your eyes. I read it over and over whenever I'm not busy oiling and assembling my collection of assault weapons. Helped me enormously. Best of all, you get the report free when you order the handy-dandy Marriage Destroyer Gold Tester. And if you are not satisfied, you can return the Marriage Destroyer for a complete refund, and you still get to keep the report. Here's how to order. Just write your name and address, and the words, yes, I'm paranoid and Looney Tunes also. Therefore, I want to get my hands on the Marriage Destroyer. Okay, after you've written that on a piece of paper, send the paper along with your name and address and your payment in the amount of $299 plus $10 postage and handling, then parentheses for a total of $309. Checks and money orders should be made payable to me, made payable to Paranoid Press, and if you prefer, you can order by phone and use your credit card. The number is 1-800-I'M-NUTS, and you can call from 9 to 5 p.m. Central Mountain Time. Sincerely, William Gorilla Bill Myers. P.S. All orders received immediately will receive an extra bonus, which is a fake Krugerrand, which will fool anybody, even a coin dealer, who does not have access to the Marriage Destroyer. Okay. Thank you. That, I wrote that probably in 10 or 15 minutes while we were sitting here, and I want to make some comments about that. Quite obviously, you cannot mail that letter as it is written. I think that you should be extraordinarily careful to only, you know, I'm surprised every once in a while somebody read something I wrote and they ask me, one of my subscribers, is that really true? You know, honestly, everything I write is true. I feel like J. Edgar Hoover sitting on my shoulder all the time. But obviously what is in this letter is not true. But that is not the point. The point is, I wrote it in a way to get it going, you know, like a grease chute. I didn't stop for anything, because now that I have this down, this is a template. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is a template even a dumb guy like John Carlton can use and flesh it out and put real bullets in there. Now we're going to get to the part where writing copy is real work, because somebody like John or me or someone has to take this template, for lack of a better word, and he has to tighten it up, make the copy legitimate. It has to be completely 100% accurate, and he has to replace those books that I wrote with bullet number one, is that it is conversational. No one has ever failed to buy a good product because it was described too clearly. You shouldn't write down to people, but you should write in a way that almost anybody can understand it. The highest paid writers of any publication on earth work for the National Enquirer, and they deserve to be the highest paid, because you have never read an article in the National Enquirer that confused you, did you? Now, I know nobody in this group has ever even read the National Enquirer, but if you know anybody who has, they were never confused. You might not agree with the article. You might think it's garbage, but it was never confused. The main job when you hire someone to write copy for you is that it needs to be understood. So this was written in shirt sleeve conversational English, okay? Another thing, you'll notice even in my joking way, when I did bullets, I didn't say how to save so-and-so. I said 42%. And a better figure would be 42.7%. Because people believe that which is specific. The more specifics you can put in a promotion, the more believability you will have in that promotion, and the more sales you will achieve as a result of it. For example, if you are selling a car and you say, this baby gets humongous gas mileage, that doesn't compare at all to saying, this vehicle gets 37.3 miles per gallon on the average on highway driving and 28.9 miles per gallon average in cities driving. You might want to write that down. Specific sell. Generalities, as Claude Hopkins once said, they're like platitudes. They just fall off of the human mind like water falls off a duck's back. Another thing, too, I used a technique in here that John and I have used very, very successfully working as a team, and that is, sometimes when you're not sure exactly how to sell something, put together a premium, and the best premiums are paper and ink premiums, that you can give away free with a trial order to this thing. When John and I worked together on a promotion that eventually doubled Howard Ruff's subscription base, that's before the mushrooms that he ate kicked in and he got into multi-level marketing. And what we did is we ordered, what, John, two or three years back issues. And we went through all the articles in all of those back issues. And we picked out the articles that he happened to guess right on. I take that back, Howard. It's just a joke, Howard. He'll watch this tape and get the Mormon Mafia after me. We took the articles that were accurate, right on, and timeless. Timeless enough to be still timely. And we had those then printed into a series. Where's John? How many reports did we do, John? John's not here?
Hello?
How many reports did we do?
11, 12.
Something like that. Yeah. But do you understand what I'm saying? We extracted articles, reformatted in the form of reports. And then we said, you get these 16 free reports.
We picked the most incendiary ones we could find.
Yes. And you get to keep those. You get them with a trial subscription to the Rough newsletter, and you get to keep them even if you return your subscription and say you want a refund. And what John Dish said, incidentally, about incendiary, when you're writing copy, let me tell you something. The people of America are bombarded with 1,500 to 1,700 selling messages a day. And there's no way you can process that many selling messages. So what you have to do is you just have to let it bounce off you. That's what we all do. So if you want to get to people, you want to write, you want to come up with titles that are almost irresistible, like the title of my book, which is subtitled, How to Get Everything You Ever Wanted, Even If You Don't Deserve It. I thought of another title today, and the title would be an offshoot of Joe Carbo's Lazy Man's Way to Riches, and it would be, How to Become Filthy Rich, Even If You Are Incredibly Lazy. People, those kind of things stand out. I used to title books, you know, you can make a book a bestseller with just the title. I came out with a book called How to Rob a Bank Without a Gun, How to Get What the U.S. Government Owes You, How to Increase the Frequency and Quality of Your Orgasms. Those kind of titles almost reach out and grab somebody and force them to read them. Another thing, too, in addition to the, you see, I took this offer a little bit further. And it's amazing what you can do. You can use paper and ink to create, you know, and you're not cheating people either, because paper and ink is the most valuable commodity in the words, depending on how the ink is configured on that. I mean, you can read something in a newsletter, or you can read something in an article or a book that can save your life, that can make you rich, that can literally, you know, increase your endurance, increase your health, increase your savvy. It can help you have a better sex life. It can help you enjoy better nutrition. You know, I'll say something that will make Bill Myers mad, because I'm going to challenge him on a quote. He says video is the literacy of the 90s. I think video is the literacy of the illiterate. And I think that it is the people who read who make this country go. And if you provide good written material, there's probably no product in the world of which you can be prouder. So the truth is, with every single product that you have to sell, anything, you can't name me any product that cannot be, the value of which cannot be dramatically enhanced by a hard-hitting, truthful, fact-filled special report that solves problems for people. So what I did is I enhanced the offer here. Also, at the end, even though I did it in a sloppy way, and we'll leave it for John to clean up, I told him specifically how to order. If you want to write copy, a good suggestion is to take promotions and ads that you know are working and write them out in your own handwriting. That's been mentioned here before. But that gives you a cellular, in addition to a cerebral, knowledge of how it works. But even if you don't want to learn how to write copy, you should at least, in your own handwriting, write out every good ordering instruction you can. It's easy to order. All you have to do is write your name and address and the words marriage destroyer in a piece of paper and send it to me with your payment of $39 or $399 plus $10 shipping and handling, parentheses, $409. Don't make them add them up. Don't make them think it. And then you tell them exactly who to make the check payable to. You tell them exactly how to send it and so forth. You give absolutely explicit instructions. There is very few people working in general advertising agencies that can write order instructions. And the reason for that is they are scared to death of figuring out, of allowing their ads to go out in any way where the response can be measured. You know, whether it's you send in money or you ask for you send in a coupon for a book, they won't do that. Because then the client will find out nobody's reading their advertising. But in this room, we're talking about direct response advertising. Now, And that is measured. Now, there are some other things that I did not do here which could possibly be done. One of the ones I like, as you already know, is I would take a picture of what I now call the marriage destroyer, of this gizmo, and if it photographs well, I would do a newspaper article, say about yay big of it, and have a write-up there. Now, incidentally, there's a couple of tricks to doing that. You write the letter, include the picture, have a headline, make it just look exactly like an article, and then you run it. You actually run it in a newspaper in Louisiana or someplace. You know, where a newspaper with a circulation of about 37 people or something. Seriously. I mean, you can do this for a couple hundred dollars. And then you tell the newspaper you're running this ad or this article, but you want the reprint rights. And, you know, you want some extra copies. And when you get the extra copies, make sure that there's something on the back of your article, just like it was cut out of the newspaper. And then you can take it to a person who prints on newsprint and run off 500,000 of them. And you make sure you print the front and back and make sure you get the rights to do this. Sometimes people have difficulty finding a printer who prints on newsprint. There's a real easy way to do that, and just find out who prints the local penny saver type publication in your area, and then you have them do it. It is at this point in the day where I go upstairs and go to bed and let John work with you from here. You want to come up and talk to them about this some more, John?
No. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening to anything you said.
No. Come on up, John. I mean, after all, you got a free lunch here. Does anyone have any questions about the work here so far? But maybe we can take some questions now before we get lost in the next part of it.
Gary, you spent more time discussing the special report. All your bullets had to do with the special report versus any benefit or feature of the product. Is that by design or simply because there was more enticement in your special
design.
Report?
It's by design. Although I don't... You got to understand, this is not a finished promotion. This is more of a blueprint or a template. However, I think on the rough promotion, we spent 3/4 of it. You want to see this?
Dribble.
Okay. Anyone else have a question?
Right here. Are we going to get a copy of the finished product?
Yes. Yes, you are. You'd like a copy of the unfinished products? You know. But wait a minute, I've got to pay John $150 for polishing this off. Actually, John, I don't know. I don't know what to do from here. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gary, in view of our target market here, 40 to 80, upper middle class and intelligent buying golden people, could you explain why you took that approach of humor, kind of off the wall, joking?
I didn't take that approach. It's very important that you understand what's doing here. When you're working with real slow-minded people like Carlton, you've got to get them awake so that they can finish this. So if he reads this and gets a little chuckle out of it, you know, he comes out of his coma long enough, you know, gets out of the stupor to finish it off. Quite seriously. No, you miss what I'm doing here. This isn't going to go out like this.
You know, even so, the approach is rather humorous, kind of like the hardest for a group that I would not think there was here.
Believe me, when John and I finish with this piece, it won't be humorous or lighthearted to anybody but me and him. The paranoids who read this will be wringing their hands, checking out their safes and opening their drawers to look at their coins and their jewelry and say, did I get ripped off? It won't be like that when we finish. Pumping their shotgun. That's right. And Bill has a great collection of assault weapons. He showed them to me today. I was only kidding. I don't mean to make you mad. I don't like to anger people with 16 assault weapons. Who else has a question?
Over here.
Huh?
Yo, yo.
In regard to your A pile, B pile, is there a difference, like, when you put it, you say a 29-cent stamp on the envelope, do they have like the common one, or would it be better to put one of the commemorative stamps?
Well, let me tell you this. That's a very good question, and the way you need to think about advertising is you need to think about the differences that scream and the differences that whisper. As it happens, if by putting commemorative stamps on an envelope instead of regular stamps, you will enhance the pulling power of your promotion. You really will. But that is the kind of thing that won't make or break a promotion. It'll just add a little bit to it. So yeah, commemorative stamps. Also, on a more practical basis, though, I worked on a promotion for a client in Arizona who ended up mailing 125,000 personalized pieces of mail a day. And had we tried to put commemorative stamps on those, it would really have slowed that process up a great deal. With your permission, I'm going to take a short diversion here and talk, because you mentioned the people that were doing the promotion to. There is a lot of confusion, even within the direct mail industry, on how to test a mailing list. And I would like to tell you the real way to test a mailing list, the street smart way. First of all, Bill is trying to work with you guys in a budget of $1,000, and so you're only going to mail 1,000 letters. In reality, if you're serious about this business, you will do tests of 5,000 pieces of mail. And in reality, a broker will not take your order unless you're ordering at least 5,000, because he knows then that you're some little guy who answered an ad and income opportunities and so forth. And brokers don't make any money on test. They only make money when you roll out, because their processing costs are more than the profits that they would make. I don't know exactly, but a broker makes about 20%, I think, on names. Say names rent for $80 a thousand, so he makes $16. If you test 5,000 names, that's $80, and that really doesn't cover his transaction cost and the cost of his time and talking to you. It only works if you roll out. So when you want to test a list, here is the real way to do it. The first thing you do is you say, let's say that this list has 500,000 names on it. You then say to the broker, I want 5,000 names. You don't have to worry about getting bad names, because the 5,000 names that you get will be the very best that list owner has to offer. Why? Because he wants you to come back and rent the rest of the list. Like Ted said, you know, his list rental revenues got up to $500,000 a year. You don't get up to that kind of income from renting your list unless you have continuances. You don't make it on test. So they will give you the best 5,000 they've got. After you get the first 5,000, conventional wisdom, let's say that mailing was successful, now you say you want 50,000. And on your 50,000 test, almost invariably, your results will be down. They won't be disastrous, but they will be down from your test. And here's a rather common scenario. You get a test sample of 5,000 names, you mail it out, you have a winner, a nice winner. Then you get 50,000 more names, and you mail it out, and you still got a winner, but it's not so hot. And then you say, well, I've mailed 55,000 names out of this 500,000 mailing list, give me all the rest of them, and then you do all the rest of them, and you go bankrupt, because the list doesn't work. What has happened there? Well, what list can be evaluated by recency, frequency, and unit of sale. You've heard some of this before, but as a general rule, the more the unit of sale, the more someone has paid to buy something similar to what you're selling, the better prospect he is. That's unit of sale. Frequency means that the more often he has paid to get this, the better customer he is. And the most important one of all is recency. all things aside, everything else considered, I want somebody who bought something similar to what I'm selling yesterday. Because people come in and out of heat for certain things. You know, guys decide that they want to collect gold coins. They don't necessarily feel like that 5 years from today. People who are interested in losing weight because they're cheating on their old lady on the side, the thing breaks up, they don't care about losing weight anymore. They just do like me. They drag their fat belly home to the woman at home, see? So you got to strike when the iron is hot. So recency is the most important of all. Now, knowing this, a guy who has 500,000 names, of about 100,000 of them are really good names, because the others haven't bought for a long time, the others bought a lower unit of sale, and the others only bought once, but he wants you to rent all 500,000 of them. How does he do this? Your first 5,000 names that you rent, he gives you the cream of the crop, the people who bought yesterday. But he doesn't. And then the next 50,000 names, he gives you the best of the rest. And now that he's got you hooked, then you go for the other 445,000 names, and he sends you the Manhattan telephone book, or what have you. You need to know how to prevent this, because sadly to say, the work that me and the other copywriters do is not the most important thing in direct mail success. The very most important thing in direct mail success is the list. Someone said, a weak offer to a hot list will work, a hot offer to a bad list won't work, and they're absolutely right. So I'm going to tell you the real way to test a list. You do order the 5,000, just as before. You get the best you've got. Then, if that is, you've got 5,000, then you look at your list card, you turn it on the back, and they will have state counts. They will tell you how many names are on that list by each state. And then let us say that you want to back, what you want is another 50,000 names. So you vacuum out all the names from California, all the names from Arizona, all the names from Arkansas, and all the names from Ohio until your total is approximately 50,000. And your list broker and the list owner will tell you that you're not very smart. You don't know what to do. It's not an exact nymph name sample. You don't want an exact nymph name sample. See, because when you vacuum out all the names from Arizona, he can't screw you. So then when you mail this 50,000, you know what your results are going to be when you mail out the balance of the list with as much reasonable certainty as you can generally expect. Does everybody understand that? No? What part don't you understand? I want to thank John for all his help up here, Bill. Can you get the sandwiches you bought for lunch back? Look at him, he's sulking, leaving the room now.
Gary, I don't understand. Why would the broad list of all the people in Arizona, for instance, be better than the remaining 450,000? That's the question.
The reason, they wouldn't necessarily be better, they would be a truer representation of his list in general. You see, when you take all the names from a geographic area, you're getting the hotline names, the best of the rest, and all the rest of them at the same time. You're getting his real list when you do that. Yeah. Yeah, you say you want 50,000 more names. Say there's 10,000 in California, you take all of those. 5,000 in Arizona, you take all of those. That's your second stage of your testing. And when you make that test, they will tell you, but you're going to get a geographic bias. You want a geographic bias as opposed to getting the bias of a dishonest list owner. Do you understand what I'm saying? You want that bias.
So, Gary, what you're saying is then, instead of going bankrupt with the rest of the 450,000, you're ending it. You're finding out. You're learning everything you could learn from that 50,000.
Exactly. You're finding out everything you could. You won't learn it from the first 5,000. You will learn how good this list is at peak. But he doesn't have 495,000 more names equal to that first 5,000. Any other questions?
Yeah, I want to back up a few minutes here.
Okay.
Just a couple of quick questions. On the newspaper article printed in Louisiana, what is the advantage of running it in Louisiana as opposed to just doing a pseudo newspaper on your desktop publishing?
Because if you run it in Louisiana, you can say, and I've enclosed an article written about this product by so-and-so, a newspaper article written about this by so-and-so, and it'll be legitimate. It will have actually ran. You can name the paper. You can name the date that ran on May 16th in the Louisiana Arkansas Gazette or something like that. See? It's just, it adds a little legitimacy to it. Huh? No, you don't. They may make you do that on the paper, but I've never felt compelled to do that when I reprinted it.